Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
If you are lucky enough to catch the attention of the media fairy godmother, who is Oprah Winfrey, your prospects for success are good. Zach Anner won an Oprah Winfrey Show network competition to host his own travel adventure show and spent a year rock climbing, water skiing, surfing, and sailing for the benefit of viewers, then later continued his excursions on his popular YouTube channel. Clearly, Anner was born under a lucky star. As it happens, he was also born with cerebral palsy. At every destination, his primary mode of transportation is a motorized wheelchair. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. In his new memoir, Zach Anner details his formative years as a kid learning to navigate the world with a body that works differently than most people's. His physical challenges were significant, but they did not keep him from working at Disney World, studying film and TV at UT, or exploring faith in a web series for Soul Pancake. Today, Zach Anner defines himself as a comedian, speaker, program host, and writer. His new memoir is called If at Birth You Don't Succeed, My Adventures with Disaster and Destiny, and you can see his work online at his YouTube channel. Zach, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
I know that people ask you in interviews when you first knew that you were different. I'm actually curious about something else, and I want to know when you first realized you were funny.
When I first my whole family was funny, so I was probably the least funny member of my family. So I think when I always knew that I could make people laugh. I didn't realize that that could be a career until much, much later. I used to do telethons as a kid, and I remember when I was 4 years old, they asked me to introduce the whole telethon, and the opening line of the speech was, "Ladies and gentlemen," right? Mm-hmm. And then I just got up there, and I got this idea in my head that I would just repeat "ladies and gentlemen" over and over and over and over and over again. And so I did that, and it was like an audience of hundreds of people, and they just were laughing hysterically. And I realized then that I could not only be funny, but the chair also helped me get away with a lot of stuff. So I realized that I could sort of be a comedian and also a jerk at the same time.
But being funny is like a superpower in that you have control over the way people perceive you.
It really is. I mean, I don't understand how people who don't have a sense of humor go through life and struggles, because, it's sort of like the best way to disarm people, and also an easy way to bridge your way into uncomfortable conversations or topics that most people wouldn't want to talk about. If you have them laughing, then you have a bridge to empathy. And that was something that I realized, pretty early, that if I can find common ground through humor, then we can talk about almost anything.
So your physical challenges are caused by cerebral palsy, which was the result of your premature birth. Will you give us just a nutshell definition of what CP is?
It really runs the gamut, but it's something that affects motor skills, and it's a neurological thing. So it's a sexy form of brain damage, it can affect all of your limbs or just a couple of them. But I got all of them, and it affects spasticity in my case. And it really, that's the thing, is like, even though I have cerebral palsy, someone else with cerebral palsy might have a completely different set of circumstances. It can be way less involved than what I have, or it can, affect things way more than I have them. So I don't even know how to explain it. And I'm sorry to all of your listeners that I am doing such a poor job of it. But yeah, for me, it just means that I get to be in this wheelchair, and, I've made a career of it. So, I mean, it's just been the It's been a real, cash cow for me.
You note that, when you got the attention of Oprah and your show was recognized, you received this title that you weren't prepared to own, which is disabled celebrity. What did you decide it would mean to you, if anything?
Well, I had never really been in an advocacy role before the Oprah thing. And I had always just thought of myself as a comedian. And, the disability was one of my tools as a comedian. And because visibility of cerebral palsy specifically is not very high, when one of us breaks through in the entertainment industry, there's this pressure to represent all disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I couldn't do that because everyone's journey with their disability or their struggle is different. And the way that I deal with mine and the way that I talk about CP, some other people may not be okay with, or, it may not speak true to them. So I just decided in the long run, it was better to let my work speak for itself and stay true to who I was creatively. And that would be the best form of advocacy that I could give.
You write candidly about your time at UT and, you were very young and you had to sort of get a sense for what was truly funny to you, what was acceptable in comedy and what was like too mean. And it wasn't necessarily directly related to the fact that you were a performer in a wheelchair. It was like really deciding how much compassion would exist within your comedy.
Yeah, and I think, I started out as an insult comic because my whole thing coming to college was that I wanted to undo every misconception that people had about people with disabilities, that they were meek and helpless. And the way I chose to deal with that when I was younger was to be as brash and rude as possible. And I realized that my entire career and my comedy was based on not wanting to be seen as something rather than what I actually wanted to do with my life. And I realized that comedy without compassion wasn't really worth it for me. Like I love insult comics and roasts and things, and if you can pull that off, that's great, but I ended up not really feeling good about myself at the end of the day because I wasn't putting positive energy out into the world. That was a really important distinction for me. It's like comedy without compassion is not what I want to do. And if I can use my position as somebody who has felt like the other, has felt ostracized at times to help others who don't have a voice and don't feel like they're recognized, get that recognition and share their perspective, then I can do that through comedy, then that's the goal, it was definitely like a great learning curve. Made some huge mistakes that I'm glad aren't on YouTube, but still like very important that everybody learns what their voice is. And I feel sort of bad for everyone in this generation where you just want to put that stuff out there and then it sort of lives forever. And, that's, you can be defined by what you did when you were, 19 or 20. And it's, thank God I was the last generation that got the privilege of not having all of their mistakes on the internet.
Just wait, though, because I'm 45 and people find old pictures and old videos and they digitize them. So be careful.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
Well, like many notable people of your generation, your celebrity is in part the product of having been like this viral sensation. Tell us about the video you made for the Oprah audition.
Oprah was doing a a contest when she launched her network a few years ago, and she was, anybody could submit a video to pitch whatever show they wanted to make. And I wanted to do, I've been wanting to do a travel show for the longest time. And, you know, like, I just decided, because my mom was telling me, you know, like, you gotta try out for this. And so I basically spent the whole video explaining why I would be a terrible show host. And, like, I, for all of the things that they had proposed, you know, cooking shows, I was, like, burning toast. And then, like, fitness, I was trying to do yoga in my underwear, and then I spent about the last 45 seconds pitching a travel show for people that never thought they could travel, and it was just sort of, I thought no one would see it, and then it sort of went viral overnight, and the rest is history. Like, I have very little perspective on how something like that happens, but it's happened to me a few times over the years, and it's just like the coolest way to be discovered, because all of a sudden people are relating to you and they are engaging with your work, and that's the best feeling in the world.
We're speaking this hour with comedian, speaker, and writer Zach Anner. His new memoir is called If at Birth You Don't Succeed, My Adventures with Disaster and Destiny. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. We're going to take a quick break from this conversation.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can customize your master's degree to distinguish yourself in the workplace. You can apply now for summer. Deadline is May 1st. More at smu.edu/MLS.
I didn't know exactly where I would fit because I have something called cerebral palsy, which I believe is the sexiest of the palsies. I decided that what I really want to do is make a travel show for people who never thought they could travel. We're just going to go on the craziest adventures we can, and whatever we encounter, we're going to have a great time. Because my mom always said, when life gives you a wheelchair, make lemonade. I don't know what she meant, but I'm going to take her advice.
That is my guest, Zach Anner. That was his online video that he submitted to the Oprah Winfrey Network to enter the competition to have his own travel show. Spoiler alert, he won and had a show called Rollin' with Zach. Zach Anner's new book is called If at Birth You Don't Succeed, My Adventures with Disaster and Destiny. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. How much, Zach, had you traveled before you got this, like, gig of a lifetime to do it on Oprah's dime?
Well, yeah. Well, I had traveled a little bit with my father, and we had sort of done these impromptu trips to Europe. And that was sort of the inspiration for why I wanted to do a travel show in the first place, because, you know, we'd gone to Italy and gone to Rome, and like had been struggling to break down my 300-pound electric wheelchair to go on these little trains, and then we went to Pompeii, and as it turns out, a city that's been covered in volcanic ash is not particularly like accessible to wheelchairs.
Right.
And it was like, you know what, showing this stuff would be a pretty good travel show, and it was sort of, you know, something that didn't come into play until 10 years later with this competition. But like, we just thought it would be really neat to make a comedic travel show where it's like, okay, I'm at the Spanish Steps. What do I do? Is there like a Spanish ramp? How do I get up these things? And so that seed was just planted years before. And then, you know, like when the Oprah thing came along, it's like, okay, now's the time to pitch this idea. And yeah, it was much better doing it with Oprah's money, I think.
So you were really annoyed to discover at one point that the judges, because what happened is you were on, before you got your own show, you were on like kind of a reality TV style competition, right? With a bunch of people who wanted their own shows. You realized that the judges were reluctant to call you out for some bad editing decision you made on a little piece you did because you had done it. Why was it so important to you that they not act like they were afraid of hurting your feelings?
Well, I mean, I think it was just I knew that this would be the first time a large audience or this audience may see somebody with a disability. So I wanted to be judged on the merits of my work. And it's really hard to do, especially since, you know, like I try to be a fun, positive guy and nobody wants to, you know, knock that. But it's also you want to be held accountable based on what you're actually there for, which is to prove that you can host your own show, not that you can like sit in a wheelchair and be positive. So like I knew that it wasn't out of any, you know, malice or anything like that or any negative thing, but it was just like I need to actually stand up and say I screwed up, and because I knew that I wouldn't be called out on it, which actually earned more respect from producers and the judges, that I refused to let my own suckiness go under the radar.
Right. Right.
And, you know, I think it's sort of, it's very counter to what we've learned from reality shows, is that you throw everybody under the bus and then you like build yourself up. And I was like, no, I want to take responsibility here. And, because it's just so important. I think there is an inclination if someone has a disability to sort of cut them some slack.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want that. I wanted to, you know, cause I had gone to school to be a filmmaker and to be a host, and I wanted to just be judged on that.
Your story is really ironic in a way, in that you've had a great deal of success with your TV show, your internet shows, speaking and comedy, and now you have a book. You've achieved the kinds of dreams that many people have, but realistically, most of us won't fulfill. Because of your disability.
Oh, yes, you will. Yes, you will.
Okay, but here.
Anybody listening, you could totally do it. Don't. Yeah,
okay,
you can, if I can do it, you can do it, I swear.
I'm not trying to kill anybody's dreams. I'm just saying that you must recognize that you've done really well. But the irony is here, and you write about this, is that because of your disability, a lot of traditional employers, like people who might need somebody to do just, you know, office work, have been reluctant to hire you or people like you. What do you think they're afraid of?
I just think it's there's a societal fear of people that are disabled or differently abled, and it's because you're like, will they be able to perform the exact same job at the exact same level? And a lot of times the answer is yes, and sometimes the answer is no, but we bring so much to the table that employers should be looking out for, and there's so much that people with disabilities can contribute to the workplace. But it's also, you know, like people are not really, they're a little bit scared about starting the conversations, I think, because, you know, we are in a place where we're very politically correct for good reason, but also I think there's a worry that if people say the wrong thing or you frame the conversation in the wrong way, that you'll say something offensive that will be a counter to what you're trying to do. And I think like political correctness is great, and that it's great that people with disabilities are getting employment opportunities, but also I always say, you know, it's okay to say the wrong thing as long as it comes from the right place and we can continue the conversation and educate along the way. And I think That's the important thing to remember. Employers shouldn't be afraid to hire workers with disabilities. They should just have more open minds, which is what I try and put out there is, you know, try to engage with who the person is, what their unique skills and talents are. Because, like, honestly, when I worked at Disney World, you know, at first they put me at the cash registers as like a salesperson for tickets. Mm-hmm. And they realized that I had good sales skills, but that, like, I dropped so much change that my register never balanced out.
Uh-huh.
And like, they're like, we don't know where all this money went. We know you're not stealing it. But I'm like, I just dropped it. Mm-hmm. But they put me in a different role that, you know, utilized what my actual talents were. And I think employers need to have that flexibility and openness and realize that you've got a unique competent person on your hands that just has a different set of circumstances.
For a while, though, at Disney World, they made you the guy that, like, you know, there are, like, special passes for people who have certain disabilities so that they don't have to wait in line. And they made you the guy that was supposed to call out people to be sure that they were actually disabled. I can't imagine having to do that.
Well, that was for sure weird, but it was, like, so every night at Disney World, they had this fireworks display called Illuminations, which was amazing. And there were specifically designated disability viewing areas so that people who were physically disabled could have a good vantage point to see them. Mm-hmm. And then people were abusing that who didn't have disabilities. So they sort of saw me as like, oh, I'm somebody that has the unique skill set to tastefully navigate, like, hey, are you actually disabled? And I screwed up immediately because I was like, oh, I'm going to get these folks, you know. And then I saw, you know, somebody that I thought was like, didn't have a disability. It was a cold night. He had his arms tucked into his shirt. He was just sitting on his dad's lap. And I was like, hey, tell me what your disability is. And the guy looked at me and he's like, are you serious? I was like, yeah, I'm serious. And then I looked and I realized that his son didn't have any legs or arms. And I had just completely missed that I was asking somebody with zero limbs what their disability was. So I stopped doing that after that point.
You did on your travel show, you did a speed dating thing, which I would think speed dating would be excruciating under any circumstances, but with cameras on you, how did you get through that? I mean, how was that not the most nerve-wracking thing you had ever done, you know, not excluding skydiving?
Skydiving was fine. I was fine facing death. Dating was, you know, like, I would have been cooler if my chute didn't open skydiving than I was on that speed dating thing. That was brutal because I, up until that point, which was, you know, I was 26 at the time, I had had exactly zero dates. And then I was, you know, going on 7 dates at once with the explicit instructions to, like, make a romantic connection, invite her on a date the next day for, like, the show. It was just the worst. And I'm a pretty social guy, but, like, I was like one of those Dateline serial killers the amount I was sweating.
But, I mean, you won't say this, so I will. You're very good looking. You're funny. You're smart.
What?
You had your own TV show. So what did you think wouldn't work about dating for you?
I just did a number on myself. I assumed that there were so many things that were different about me and that I had so many issues that I wasn't worthy of being dateable. And I think it's a narrative that I've heard from a lot of people with disabilities of like, oh, I can't date because of the CP, or, you know, because I've got this going on. And it's really, it's just a wall that you're putting up. You're BSing yourself, because, like, I was so concerned about how people would view my disability that, like, I didn't even make an effort. Like, and that's the thing, is people will come up with a lot of excuses not to make an effort. But when you really look at it, you don't, like, you bring enough to the table that you are desirable. The only thing that makes you not desirable is, like, giving into what your problems are and letting that sort of become your whole personhood.
Comedian, program host, and writer Zach Anner is my guest. His new memoir is called If at Birth You Don't Succeed, My Adventures with Disaster and Destiny. We'll come back to our conversation with Zach in a couple of minutes. You can join it by finding me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think or emailing think@kera.org. We'll be back with Zach in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where students can customize their degree, like former student Dr. Candace Bledsoe, educator and community leader in diversity and inclusion. More at smu.edu/GLS.
You know, a lot of people come up to me and they say, Zach, I feel really bad for you because you're in a wheelchair. They shouldn't. I don't think that people understand how comfortable sitting is. Have you tried? I mean, it's much easier than standing. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
That is my guest, Zach Anner, doing stand-up comedy. We are talking to him about his new memoir, If at Birth You Don't Succeed, My Adventures with Disaster and Destiny. You can join us at 800-933-5372. Zach, you know that your cerebral palsy is interpreted by people who can walk as the one thing that God didn't do on purpose. I know you say that partially as a joke, but is that weirdly offensive, the assumption by people that your disability is so awful that it can't possibly be part of any kind of divine plan, if there is such a thing?
Well, I think it's strange to me, because when I showed up in Austin, it was definitely a little bit of a shock that homeless people used to give me things.
Are you kidding? Is that a
no,
joke?
I'm not kidding. I used to, you know, if they had food or whatever, they would offer it to me, or you know, offer me their change. And it's like, wow, I feel very, very fortunate in my life. And the fact that I'm in a wheelchair is basically the one problem that I have. That and the lazy eye, and the fact that I'm in my underwear at like 3 p.m. most days. But like, it's, I think, you know, I get prayed for a lot. Hmm. You know, it's always sort of, I feel bad because, you know, they do the praying, and I always feel like I should give it my best shot and try and stand and walk for them, and it never works. But I do think that, you know, whether you believe in a higher power or not, having cerebral palsy, I've used it to do something greater with my life. And I think, you know, limitations and tools are often the same thing. It all just depends on perspective. And, you know, funneled through my other talents, the comedic ones and the, you know, just the other skills that I have as a writer and a creator, you know, the cerebral palsy is just another way to get my message out there. And so I think that if there is a God, or, you know, that he, this isn't a mistake. And I think, you know, people I'll always try and keep standing up for the people that pray. But if it doesn't work out, no big deal. You know, I'm happy with it. And I think, you know, we've all got struggles. It's just that mine are a little more out there than most people's. And I think that regardless of what your struggle is, whether it's financial or you have self-confidence issues or anything else, all of that is set from the same cloth, you know, and we're kind of going through this stuff together. So, you know, I'm no different than somebody that's struggling with another issue. It just they may be able to walk and I can't.
You have really good friends, and we meet a lot of them in this memoir. And it's clear that these are friends who really see you for yourself and are not unaware of your disability, but it's not really a factor here or there in their friendship with you. I'm curious about the way that, you know, young men in particular kind of give each other a hard time, and about whether people outside of your friend group, you know, look at the kinds of jokes that you exchange. And I'm sure there's a line that everybody understands that you wouldn't cross with them and they wouldn't cross with you. But can you talk a little bit about, like, how humor plays into your relationship with your good friends who might, you know, make jokes about things that other people think are just horrendous?
Yeah, I have the best friends in the world that have and would literally carry me up mountains and facilitate everything that I want to do creatively. And they also have no problem making fun of me. And it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. And, like, I said this once and I didn't, you know, like, first of all, the truest friends are the ones that can make fun of you and you feel safe in that. And, like, we will trade... we'll trade insults back and forth. And, like, one time my friend said, my favorite thing is to just, like, as a joke, be mean to you in public sometimes because I like to see how people react.
Right.
But this is, you know, the same guy that, like, carried me for 2 miles on his back, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, and that's the thing. I feel like once we get to a place as a society where we can all make fun of each other and no one's worried that it's coming from a place of malice or ignorance, then it'll be a utopia for everybody.
I have to ask you something that has just always possessed me. How do people who work for Oprah Winfrey respond to sightings of Oprah Winfrey? Like, is there a hush through the building? Is there a code word that people use when she steps through the front door?
When I was on the reality show, I because their whole thing was Oprah was coming to interview us, but we weren't supposed to know about it. So they had the code name for her, which was Big Bird. And I sort of put two and two together of who Big Bird might be. But, you know, once Oprah steps into a room, you feel instantly at ease. Mm-hmm. Or at least I did. That's why she's Oprah, is that she instantly makes you feel like you're her best friend, even if you've just met. And I think when I saw Oprah, it was just sort of like, oh, Oprah Winfrey sitting across from me. That's pretty cool. But it was like, okay, well, we both worked really hard to get where we are, and I didn't see her as somebody that I should be scared of, but somebody that I could learn from.
Well, I guess you're not like, you know, a middle class lady from middle America with two kids and a minivan, which is kind of her target audience too, right?
Oh, well, I still watched Oprah you know, quite a bit, because my mom has a minivan and is of a certain age. I always respected her as an interviewer and as a leader. And it was just sort of like she was always a presence in my house. But then once you see her as a person, it just that stuff just sort of melts away. And it's like, okay, we're both here as human beings. And that's how it always should be.
So you share a couple of very funny stories in the book that are really not easy to discuss on radio, which is why I haven't brought them up, and we won't go farther
than
that.
Thanks. Yeah, how do we... I mean, you might get negative pledges if we went too deep.
People ask for their money back, right, after that.
Yeah.
But my question is, you know, I find it very charming that you're willing to reveal things about yourself that are so, they're just kind of, they would be universally embarrassing to anybody. How did you get to a place in your life where you didn't feel the need to cover that sort of thing up? You said, you know what, I'm going to own this and I'm going to tell it in a funny way and I'm going to use this so that I'm not just crippled by embarrassment over this thing.
Well, I think that when you take any embarrassing situation and you turn it into a story that has, you know, a lesson and is emotionally relevant to somebody other than yourself, the idea of, you know, what can I say? The idea of, can I say crapping your pants on a reality show?
You just don't say it. Don't say it again. But
okay.
We got it.
But like the idea of doing that is like, okay, if this is a story that I can actually get meaning from and share with others and make them feel a little less alone, then I should tell it. And, you know, I was able to, on this book, I was sort of emboldened because I met, I fell in love and I met my writing partner, Jillian Grassi, and she sort of became a person that I could work through all of these really emotional things that I wouldn't have the courage to tell otherwise. But it was like, now that I felt sort of safe going through all the things that I was scared to talk about beforehand. And once I realized, okay, this probably isn't a universal experience, but enough people have gone through it and are going to feel less alone because I'm telling it. And it's really funny. And if you can think of any story that would be fun to tell your friends and that makes the horrible things a little bit better if you can make art out of it. And I just called that story art. Yes, unapologetically. make sure to pledge at the $10 a month level or more for more great stories like that on KERA.
Thank you for that.
No problem. We can do more of that if you want. I'm totally up for pimping you guys.
we'll let it go there. But thank you. Zach Anner is a comedian, speaker, program host, and writer. His new memoir is called If at Birth You Don't Succeed, My Adventures with Disaster and Destiny. He's also got his own YouTube channel. Zach, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for making this time for us.
Thank you so much.